If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
And now, really feeling for those long-suffering Boston fans, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are, Petro, on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we are broadcasting live. Our Father's Day tour continues. Great spots to come look for a gift for Dad. Yesterday, we were over at the Kansas City Barbecue Store in Olathe. We go to the Northland, I-29 just south of the airport. That is where you find the greatest location when it comes to Harley-Davidson motorcycles, anything that goes on your Harley, anything that goes on you when you go on the Harley, even how to get on your Harley. That's right. They'll even teach you how to ride. Don't worry if you don't know how to ride your Harley. They will teach you and, of course, get you the perfect Harley of your dreams. It's all right here. Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29 just south of the airport. And bike night going on tonight. Every Thursday night is bike night. The best bike nights in town are right here at Worth Live Disco with Boogie Nights on stage from 6 to 9 p.m. And then starting up tomorrow, all kinds of festivities. Really, it begins today all the way through the weekend. In fact, Friday afternoon through Saturday afternoon, 36 local finalists. You know, there's ice-cold beer. I haven't got to it yet, despite how I just pronounced the word finalists. You might think I got to it. Although Hartzell's got the barbecue. He's teasing us. He's just brought it in. Oh, just has it here in front of us, just teasing us. Great, great championship caliber barbecue here at Worth for the bike nights. You can enjoy it. Of course, the ice cold beer as well. And I mentioned special events going on. 36 local finalists competing to be crowned grand champion of Kansas City barbecue. Now, I want you to understand what this means and what's at stake should you be by here on Friday or Saturday. The person that wins will receive a licensing opportunity for 1 year in an 8,000-square-foot restaurant located in Concourse B at the brand-new KCI Airport. Think about that. Basically, your own spot at the country's newest airport. That is what's at stake. That is a hell of a prize. The menu will feature the award-winning recipes as part of the overall concessions program, celebrating local restaurants and showcasing Kansas City businesses. Additional restaurant features will include the Barbecue Hall of Fame with images, memorabilia, and information about the Kansas City Barbecue Society, American Royal World Series of Barbecue, and Operation Barbecue Relief. So a lot at stake. There's always a lot going on at Worth, and this weekend nonetheless. In fact, even more than normal. Start out with a little boogieing. Curtis, you like the disco. You love to dance the disco.
Oh, yeah.
Boogie Nights, they're fantastic. They're absolutely fantastic, and they're going to be performing tonight. Are you breaking out the bell bottoms and the platform shoes?
Probably so. I mean, I love the nightlife. I've got the boogie on the disco round. Oh, yay. Someone got that.
Curtis just grew an afro in the last 10 seconds of you talking about this. I'm amazed. I didn't even know that was possible.
Got my disco, got my silk shirt, my Sans belt slacks, my platform shoes, and my chains. I'm ready
that,
to go.
Is that gets, John Travolta or Curtis Siebold sitting over there?
It gets in his soul.
I've slathered myself with English leather. Mm-hmm. Ready to
go. Sure, absolutely. Get that chest hair out. Make sure that's working. Of course, they will have their award-winning barbecue, award-winning barbecue that Worth Harley-Davidson always has, championship-caliber barbecue team, as you can get great barbecue here. Worth is getting brand-new 22 bikes in every single day, and they have a huge selection of used bikes on the showroom floor, plus they're giving you cash for your used bikes. That's right. Do it in person or online and see what your bike is worth in minutes. Go to WorthHarleyDavidson.com. It's always a great time, and there are always great deals on bikes at Worth Harley-Davidson, so make sure to come see me here today or all weekend. Rick, Chris, the whole crew here at Worth has you guys covered always when it comes to your Harley-Davidson motorcycle, the best selection, the beautiful bikes. Nobody does a better job getting you financed. Nobody does a better job on your trade. If you've got a title on anything, bring it in. You can probably work out a trade on a Harley-Davidson of your dreams right here. I-29 just south of the airport. Why the hell not, I ask you? One simple question, why the hell not? You're worth it. Let's go. I-29, just south of the airport. Coming up here in a little bit, we're going to be joined by the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. We will talk to him. Listen, I think J.J.'s a big boy. He's aware that We're going to have to talk about some struggles with the pitching staff, so we'll do that. We will talk about Cal Eldred and where he stands now. A month or so ago, you know, the Royals talked about the youth on the pitching staff. Where do things stand at this point right now? We'll talk to him about that. What kind of resources are available for the ball club? I intend to ask him about, you know, owners slap down $1 billion and then get hit with a pandemic. Is part of the reason that maybe this team's record isn't better is because in normal times, maybe on down the road, there'll be more to spend, right? More to just buy when you need to supplement something. We'll talk about the you know, the pitching staff in general. We'll ask about Vinny Pasquantino, when he might be up. Just a lot about where things are right now. The mindset is the idea of building it back for the long haul. Fool's gold. Is it something that can't be done? And as a small market team, or at least can't be done unless you have like very little margin for error. And do small market teams need to target windows like they had from 13 to 17? We'll talk about all that with JJ Pecola coming up in our next segment. We'll play Stuff the Chumps coming up at 3. Peter Yates Enoch will join us. We play for great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Three great locations. We'll play Stuff the Chumps on the 3 o'clock, in the 3 o'clock hour. Bob Glauber to join us in the 4 o'clock hour, and in the 5 o'clock hour, Jeff Passan from ESPN. He is our Major League Baseball insider. So we will talk to Jeff Passan coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. But we're going to get to some NBA Finals as well. You know, I think what's amazing, and I noticed this watching the coverage today, who won is not the story. Right? Is that just the takeover, the continued global domination of sports talk radio over all of sports media? And if you think like, oh, that's funny or stupid or whatever your reaction is, if you think I'm kidding, take a look at ESPN and tell me what you're watching isn't just what we've been doing here in this industry, what we've been doing on the show for 20 years. I mean, all those 30-minute and 60-minute talking head shows is just sports talk radio. Is it that the bigger talk radio topic is not the Celtics are up 2-1? Are they going to win this series? How do you got to hunker down on defense and defend the Celtics better? How do the Warriors get their high-octane offense going more consistently? Are they old? Are they young? Are they put together wrong? What happened to Jordan Poole? Where was he in this game? That's not what it is. The topic is Draymond Green versus Boston Celtics fans. The topic is fan conduct. The topic is Steve Kerr, who I'm a fan of. Tisking some fan bases while maybe not even understanding what's going on in his own house, or at least ignoring what's going on in his own house. Is that really where we are now that the NBA Finals, this isn't a Tuesday game number 56 between two teams. This is the NBA Finals. It amazes me that the entire season that we discuss when the NBA comes up and the talking heads around the NBA, and obviously NBA is not the primary focus here in Kansas City, but for the most part, the topics throughout the season are what this game means for winning a championship. What's going on right now for winning a championship? And then when we play for the championship, the topics are anything but the championship. Am I the only one that sees this going down the way it's going down?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I hadn't thought about it specifically, but it does seem like every time I look up at one of the TV screens, they're not really talking about the game as much. There's a few. I mean, what stood out to you about the Celtics in Game 3 win is up there now on ESPN, but it's alarming how much of it is the side stuff. Particularly after a game that in a series that I think is hugely compelling, in the way the two teams on the court have played differently from game to game, the adjustments that have been made. You flip venues, and now Boston has kind of regained the home court with a big win last night. There are so many things about what happened in the game with the players that there's no reason to really talk about the other stuff, but it's getting a lot of oxygen today.
Yeah. Well, listen, when blank you, Draymond, blank you, Draymond, is bellowing out over the television, yeah, and they're trying to figure out, well, we know when somebody catches a guy with one profanity, but what do we do with a chant from the crowd? Mm-hmm. Do you kill the whole crowd, Mike? Is it picking up on the announcers' headsets? It's interesting times, and I'm going to tell you, I'll talk a little bit more about it later on. Like I said, But it is, if you think our conversation, or if you thought our conversation from several weeks ago about the hostility between fans and players isn't becoming a bigger deal, I don't know.
Yeah.
This is, you know, getting, and Draymond Green, and listen, I'm not, this is not to chastise the fans, although I would never be one to chant that at a game, but this isn't just on the fans. And it isn't just on the players. It's a reality on both sides. So yeah. I do think it's amazing that we're three games into an NBA Finals that looks like it could be a classic. If the Celtics take the next one, that may change the tone of things.
Yeah. I've got some numbers on that.
Yeah, when we'll get to that here in a little bit.
Yep.
But it could change the tone of things, but speaking of tone, did we notice a different tone from Andy Reid in the last hour? We'll hear more. I know a lot of folks just heard that on the Zone as we heard the whole press conference, but Andy Reid kind of leading things off about 110, 115. If you were listening, I was following along on my drive up here to Worth. You notice a different tone out of Andy Reid?
He was positively jaunty today. He was
yes,
happy Andy.
And what connection can we draw?
No Lebo.
No Lebo. The world, it seems, is better with Todd Lebo living in a treehouse than it is doing his job. Is Chad Boger paying attention? Is anybody noticing? I mean, I've been pointing out how Lebo just crushes this station for years and nobody's listened. Now listen to cheery, jovial, Santa-esque Andy Reid and tell me that I haven't been validated.
He should have come with a laugh track today. One of those old 70s Happy Days laugh tracks. That was what he should have had.
By the way, hashtag sarcasm.
Yes.
Tongue planted firmly in cheek. If you're like, Petros hated Lebo? What the? No. Lebo's the best. I love Lebo. And I think what happened is the blow up from his behavior, Andy Reid's behavior last week, resonated. And good. Listen, everybody has a bad day. I stand by every single word that I have said about the how Andy Reid reacted to a legitimate question from Todd Lebo. But I also think, and I will offer this up to everybody, I said at that time, this is not a statement about fire Andy Reid or the Chiefs are bad or any of those things. But you know, it was wrong what he did. And I will offer up that at this time that, you know, everyone's, you know, entitled to a bad day. And when you do something that's in front of everybody, it can look like a bad day. Everyone gets to see your bad day. A lot more gets made of it, as opposed to having a bad day if you're building fence posts out alone 40 miles from anybody else in western Texas. I had a bad day. Well, as long as one of the steer don't barrel into the half-assed fence post, we should be fine. Nobody will notice. If we're making that the center point of it, you know, it's the primary episode of the next Yellowstone. They're going to, yes, Yellowstone does take part in Texas for several episodes. You'll have to watch to figure out when. But, yes, it does, because I, unlike Curtis, am hip to the modern pop culture. Then we would notice, right? We would notice then if in the middle of a Yellowstone episode the fence went down, because TV cameras on, people were watching. Andy Reid, I'm willing to say, just had a bad day last week. He certainly seemed to want to make up for it this week, and that's good. So I applaud him. You know, Todd wasn't there. I make a joke about that. I think he would have been jovial either way, and I think he recognizes focusing on football that there are questions that need to be answered, and he handled the questions from Orlando about Orlando Brown, who's made quite a stir over the last 48 hours as well. He handled those very well. He did not – no one was called a shock jock. Now, I'll tell you what, if there's another situation and – Todd Lebo comes back, and what would be great is if Mick Schaefer asks him a question about something that one of his other players said, and he turns to Todd Lebo next week and goes, I knew it, you shock jock. Okay? Like, and it'd be great if Mick's on one side of the room and Todd's on the other, and you get the whole head turn. All right, well, then what I'm saying here about just having an off day, throw that all away. We will know it's that SOB Todd Lebo. So just keep that. We're filing it away. We're gonna watch and see how it goes tomorrow.
For the first time,
watch and see how it goes tomorrow.
Sorry, my bad. I should know. I've been on enough remotes. I should know just to let you stop talking. For the first time that I can recall, and I would say this if it was people down the dial who had done this. For the first time, I think this is about 9 years since Andy Reid's been here. there was a confrontation between the Chiefs and the media, and the fans chose the media. And I think that might have gotten back to them. Oh,
I think so too.
Oh, you're not on our side this time? Wait a minute.
Yeah. We better check ourselves. Maybe we screwed this one up, you know. But, yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, listen, Chiefs fans love their Chiefs, and they don't want to hear anything negative about the Chiefs, right? And if you cross the Chiefs or upset the Chiefs, you're the problem. That is generally the reaction of every passionate fan base, and it's no different with the Kansas City Chiefs. It's definitely the case with every college fan base. I'm enjoying my time off from the college frustrations. You know, that is the joy of the summer. We're all pretty much Royals and Chiefs fans. I haven't had an opportunity to piss UKU and K-State and Missouri fans off in a while. I'll do that tomorrow at 5 when we bring Lance Leipold on and I field an email that says, why didn't you have Eli Drinkwitz on? When are you going to get to Chris Klieman? You know, Kansas fans are no different, by the way.
No.
You know, just something to consider. Something to consider. Listen, I want to take a break. I want to break early here because we're going to bring on J.J. Pecola, and I want to make sure we have time to get to all the topics. I'm very appreciative of J.J. Pecola, the general manager of the Royals, making time for us today, as we are of the Royals, who pretty much exclusively or across the board, I shouldn't say exclusively, across the board are very generous with their time. And so this isn't an easy time to come on, right? J.J. Pecola is going to come on and talk to us and listen, it ain't the rosiest of times. And I think Kansas City fans should appreciate that under Dayton Moore and Allard Bear was this way as well, that the organization wasn't as big as it is now, but they have always taken the time to come on and talk to the media, which is talking to the fans through the media. And I want everybody to appreciate that because it'd be really easy to be like, yeah, you know, when do we win like 5 in a row? Then call me. And that wasn't the reaction. We asked at a time that things aren't going well, and J.J. Pecola agreed to come on and give us that time. And that should be appreciated by Kansas City Royals fans. I hope you do. Listen, I hope you appreciate Worth Harley-Davidson, the Midwest's greatest, best, biggest Harley-Davidson dealership anywhere around. They've got a great event going on. Boogie Nights tonight. Of course, Bike Night on every Thursday night is always an iconic event. Go to WorthHarleyDavidson.com to see the calendar of events that are coming up. And Friday through Saturday, the Big Barbecue Contest. 36 local finalists competing to be crowned grand champion. They will receive a licensing opportunity for a year at the airport. That's right. They'll have their own spot located in Concourse B at the brand new KCI airport. It is just a fantastic competition. So if you can get here today, come in, check out the best bikes, stay for bike night. If you can get in here tomorrow, you can check out the barbecue competition tomorrow and Saturday. Always tons going on and always the best selection of Harley-Davidson motorcycles anywhere around. It's right here at Worth. The 22s are rolling in. Get them right now. I-29, just south of the airport. Why the hell not? You're worth it. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we broadcast live at Worth Harley-Davidson. I-29, just south of the airport. Don't forget Bike Night tonight. Disco Boogie Nights is going to be on stage, one of the best disco bands you're going to find anywhere around there on stage tonight from 6 to 9. And, of course, Friday night through Saturday afternoon, it is the big barbecue competition. Somebody's going to be crowned grand champion of Kansas City Barbecue. 36 local finalists are competing, and they're competing for to get a licensing opportunity for 1 year in an 8,000 square foot restaurant located in Concourse B at the brand new KCI airport. So this is a big one with a big prize. Come check it out. They're going to be barbecuing and rocking and rolling all weekend long here at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport. We talk Royals baseball. General Manager J.J. Pecola joins us here in the program. J.J., how are you, sir?
Doing okay, Saran.
Thank you for the time, first of all, and thanks for joining us. You know, I know this isn't where you wanted to be as a ball club. As you look at it, is there something you point to to say that this is where maybe we've gone wrong, or this is why we think that, you know, as the second and third thirds, as we've just kind of cleared the one third mark, are trending up? I mean, what do you view right now as we are kind of at a snapshot of the one third mark of the season?
Well, we're certainly disappointed in where we're at this point of the year. We didn't expect to have the record that we have at this moment. You know, you never expect that it's going to be smooth sailing all the way through. But when I look back on the first third of the season, you know, we just have not clicked on all cylinders at one time. And I think that's indicative of, you know, winning two games in a row and not having a 5 or 6 game winning streak, you know, whether it's the offense not clicking on a certain night, getting a good start from a starting pitcher and then the bullpen not pitching well or vice versa. We just haven't had a stretch of games where, you know, everything was clicking and winning some close games. And, you know, it certainly tests our patience and causes us to reflect and try to solve things. But, you know, right now we got to weather the storm. We just got to remain positive with our players, continue to ask questions of our staff, and work to right this ship and build upon something that will help us moving forward.
Is there at any point do you look at it and say, okay, you know what, we took a swing, but this doesn't fit, and we need to, you know, the term the fans would use would be blow it up and restart. I mean, is that even possible with a major league ball club?
Yeah, I don't think it's very difficult to blow everything up, and I don't think we're in a position where we should be blowing things up. I think we have some exciting young players on this team. I believe right now we have 9 rookies on the team. You know, going back to 3-4 weeks ago when we made a change with our hitting coach, you know, the standings looked very different at that time than they do right now, and we realize that, and we have to sort of shift our thinking. You know, we still have to get better and concentrate on 22, but we also have to have an eye on where we're going in the future, 23, 24, 25, because there is a pretty good nucleus, not only here in the major leagues, but also in the minor leagues that we are counting on to join this club, whether it's 22, 23, or 24. We have a good nucleus, good farm system. So there's reason for us to stay motivated, continue to, again, to ask the questions, and not to say we need to blow this thing up. I think going into this year, you know, with some young players on the team, you know, we are looking towards the future, but at the same time, we had enough veterans on the club that we thought we could compete in a division that we thought was winnable. Right now, you know, obviously that's a very difficult thing for us to say, but we do have to remain positive and make strides through this year so our future continues to look bright.
You mentioned the change with the hitting coach. You were asked questions at that time about, hey, the numbers aren't much better on the pitching side of things. You talked about the youth that was there, and that's how the pitching, the evaluation or the view of the pitching was different than the hitting. It continues to struggle. Is the view the same when it comes to Cal Eldred?
So, you know, as we've said over and over, you know, we do feel like, you know, there's some grace here because of the youth on our staff, but we believe Cal has a really good working relationship with our pitchers. He knows the background with all of them really since the day they were acquired. He's really well versed in all of our pitcher strengths and weaknesses and has conviction in what he's teaching. We think he's really sound with his deliveries. He's helped guys learn to repeat their deliveries and, you know, while trying to stress the importance of executing pitches within a game plan. And that's a difficult thing. He's also shown the ability to use our R&D department and our technology to help pitchers get back on track. And I think Brady Singer is a great example. And Cal, you know, in conjunction with our R&D department, noticed that Brady had gotten a little bit away from his fastball movement profile, and it came down to the tilt in his hand. You know, he identified that along with the R&D department. They got to work on it, you know, while Brady was working out of the bullpen, really straightened that out, and he made 2 outings out of the bullpen where we felt very good about his fastball being not only back in the zone, but also with the movement that we had seen previously. You know, and then it was just a matter of really sending Brady back to the minor leagues and emphasizing the changeup development and then getting his pitch count up. But really, Cal, you know, exemplified there his ability to, you know, work, you know, outside of some of his comfort zones with his history with deliveries and pitching and using other resources. So that's a win for us. That's a big win for us. Brady comes back and, you know, he's our pitcher of the month. He had a good start the other day. So, you know, it's things like that that we have to draw upon to make decisions. And that certainly was one that we're really happy with the work Cal and Larry Carter, our bullpen coach, along with our AAA pitching coaches, were able to execute.
Because the numbers, and listen, I don't know how I look at the sites and I see the numbers that they put up there about what pitch is being thrown, what percentage of the time. FanGraphs is one of them. Baseball Savant does things like that. But I also know I've stood in the clubhouse and said, oh, he threw that pitch and had big leaguers be like, no, that was this. And so my point is, I think that's a good tool, but I don't know that it's 100% accurate. And a lot of people would say that it's the throwing of the changeup that really got Brady Singer going. You're saying it's as much or more about the shape of his fastball. And because, listen, you know what the environment is there, and there's no, it's a thankless job being a hitting and pitching coach. And your name really only gets brought up when things aren't going well. And there's an idea and perception. And even the piece that was written today by Sam McDowell kind of points to the fact that, hey, guys come up, they seem to be rolling down in the minors. They come up, they're good when they first get up. Two seven-inning shutout performances from Brady Singer, to use him as an example. And then it's diminishing returns the longer they're up at the big league level. People would point to the turnaround on Brady Singer being the fact that he went to the minors, and the minors, he started throwing his changeup. How would you view that? How would you react to that kind of criticism?
Well, there's so many factors that go into that. I mean, one, when you go down to the minor leagues, especially when you've had the number of starts that Brady had in the major leagues, he's going to have the confidence, all right, I know now I need to throw this changeup, and he does it well, and now he starts using it in the major leagues. But as far as the regression that you're referring to, you know, this is a cat and mouse game at the major league level. So, you know, Brady goes out that first game and throws, I want to say it was 16 changeups. You know, so next time through, is the team going to be on the changeup? Are they not going to be on the changeup? And it turned out, you know, he got through that game with seven scoreless. And then come the third start, now teams are preparing for the changeup, which is exactly what we want, because Brady's bread and butter is his slider. You know, so he's got really good fastball movement and his slider. So that count and mouse game is always going to happen. And the more veteran pitcher is going to adjust quicker and literally pitch to pitch. And the lesser experienced pitcher is going to be a little bit slower to recognize and make those adjustments. So, you know, I don't know exactly what those numbers are, but I understand what you're saying. But it's not really overly surprising that happens. I think what we need to look at is what's going to happen, you know, the next start and the start after that. And does he start trending back the right way? Just using Brady as an example. You know, tonight we got Chris Bubich going. Chris threw a decent game the other day without his best stuff. It was a great thing to see. So what is Baltimore going to do built off of what they saw last Saturday night to prepare for tonight? If our game plan is good and Chris can execute to a game plan, you know, he's going to have a good night. So there's a lot of things that factor into that. You know, I think you also probably got to separate starters and relievers when you look at things like that. Brady and Bubich started, and you guys like, you know, Peacock and Coleman and Foster Griffin come up. They're thrown one inning at a time. So I think the starters probably were a bulk of those numbers. But that's okay. It's good for us to be aware. But I also think it's very indicative of how fast the major league game changes night to night, start to start for all of these pitchers.
So you don't there isn't like one mindset that's going on at Triple A and a different mindset that's going on in the big leagues. There is the continuity amongst the different levels.
Well, no, there's continuity. I think that the difference is in Triple A, I'm not sure any of our fans are looking at Omaha to see if they won last night. They're looking to see who did what. So it's more of a development mindset in Triple A. And even though there has to be development in the major leagues, you need to win in the major leagues. You need to pitch well in the major leagues to get a win. You need to throw five innings and keep the team in the game and be ahead to get a win. So I think that's, you know, really the fundamental difference between the minor leagues and the major leagues is just winning is paramount. And transitioning players from the minor leagues to the major leagues and understanding how important it is to make a change really quickly is difficult. You know, I'm reminded of that every time I have the privilege of having a conversation with Zach Greinke, and he walks through the timeline of his career and you get bits and pieces and how he's changed and evolved, and more so how he's willing on any given night in the middle of a game to make a change. And that comes with a lot of experience. And obviously Zach's done it for 18 years at a very high level. So he may not be the best example, but he's a great example in my mind, and a great guy for our young guys to watch and listen to how he speaks and how he works.
Yeah, every conversation I've ever had with Zach Greinke, I would call a privilege as well. They're some of the most entertaining and most, and frankly, some of the I've learned the most from. I never knew about the touch gene until I talked to Zach Greinke, and he explained the touch gene to me, his ability to throw strikes, make free throws, and I don't know if you know this, but also pick out the kid who can't return a serve in volleyball and pound his jump serve at him. Did you know he has that ability?
I did not know that, but it's so very true when you talk about the touch gene. You know, the hump that young pitchers have to get over is that they can live in the strike zone. They don't have to make perfect pitches. So when we look at why are we walking guys right now, why is our first pitch strike percentage low, it's really having the confidence that you can live in the strike zone and not every hitter is going to beat you on every pitch. When you get over that hump, you're going to be able to make better pitches. And that's something that we're talking about day to day and, you know, trying to get guys to get that belief that I can throw a pitch in this zone. It doesn't be in the very top corner of the zone, but if I get it in the zone where the hitter's weakness is, that's a good pitch. It's a win. Because if I'm just trying to hit the top edge corner of that zone, there's a good chance it's going to be a ball. And that's one of the things we're trying to work on right now with all of our pitchers.
The industry, the pitching industry, has gone more to the swing and miss. Now, part of that's because hitters have helped them because there's been, you know, the view of a hitter. It's not the great scarlet letter that you have to wear when you strike out 100 times in a season. Teams are willing to live with strikeouts so that the batters will help you a little bit more because they're looking to hit the ball and a long way and really drive it. You know, is that, you know, the strikeout numbers on your guys are not as high as say in the industry. There's it's amazing, particularly relievers. I mean, everybody is like, you know, Billy Wagner now, you know, I mean, guys that you're like, that just really stood out. It seems like everybody's got two or three of those guys. Is the strikeout not as much of a priority for you? Is that something that's lacking in, you know, for your staff?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say it's a priority. I mean, because I think part of what's happened in the industry and what's happening to our young pitchers is they're so concerned with swing and miss that they're trying to attack swing and miss from the first pitch of the at bat, and more often than not, you end up 1-0. And when you get to 1-0, 2-0, 3-1, 2-0, obviously it swings to the hitter's favor. And you know, so the swing and miss is important, and the strikeouts are important. But the thing that we've tried to emphasize throughout our system is you need to focus on what you're doing in the first two strikes before you ever think about a strikeout. So if you can get to two strikes efficiently, you now have the ability to strike a guy out. Now, some guys aren't built for strikeouts, and we recognize who they are. But there are guys that we have on our major league staff that we feel like they'll continue to improve their strikeout rates, because they do have the stuff to get swing and miss. But until they get to a two strike count, and I'm the 2-2 is not a count I'm talking about, or 3-2 is not a count. It's the 0-2-1-2 count that really is the most important thing to strike guys out. And right now we haven't gotten there. We haven't gotten there enough. So until we control the at bat in the first two strikes, and on the flip side, it's the same thing with hitters. You know, if you're able to control your at bat prior to two strikes, you're not going to strike out as much. You know, now if you're getting to two strikes too often as a hitter, you're probably going to strike out. If you're not getting to the 1-2 and 0-2 count as a pitcher, you're probably not going to strike guys out. That gets into the chase rate. Hitters are more likely to chase pitches out of the zone if they know you're going to be in the zone. If they don't think you're going to be in the zone, they're not going to chase. And that plays out throughout the industry.
Can you have a pitch that you know, can you hold a pitch in reserve that you know is the swing and miss pitch? I mean, I get the concept of getting to 0-2, 1-2, and then, okay, now I can go for the strikeout because I'm one pitch away, as opposed to, you know, maybe nibbling or doing things where you end up in some 10-pitch, you know, war with a batter and you end up wearing yourself out. But is the game, are pitchers good enough? Are your pitchers good enough to hold a pitch in reserve that this is the one that I'm going to fire that gets me the swing and miss? Until then, I'm going to try to be pitch efficient.
There are pitchers that can do that have that wipeout split finger or slider or whatever it may be, and they command it really well. They can throw for a strike, then they can throw for a chase pitch. But I believe that when you get into those, 10 pitch at bats you're talking about, which we watched Daniel Lynch do that a couple times this year, once in Baltimore, once against Detroit. And he kept going at him with the same pitches, and they're fouling pitches off. He was trying to get fastballs at the top of the zone by guys, when really the solution was more changeups earlier in the count. So, but he's also got a slider, so Daniel's got a, we saw it the other night, I think he had 9 swings and misses on his slider. He also gets swing and miss on his changeup, and he gets swing and miss on his fastball up. So now it gets into sequencing. How do I use my pitches effectively? And again, how do I read this at bat? Because my at bat against Miguel Cabrera may be different than it is against Candelario, who's hitting right behind Miguel Cabrera. And that's the experience part that we have to recognize. It takes those repetitions and those battles to understand when I need to shift. And then you'll see more swing and miss.
We're talking to JJ Piccolo here in the program. JJ, you mentioned the first pitch and the strikeout to walk ratio, and you said basically, you have to have the confidence to throw it, that it maybe doesn't have to have a perfect pitch to do it. Is that to say that your guys don't have that confidence right now? And if so, how do they get that confidence to throw that pitch?
Yeah, I think they're gaining confidence with it. So, every day they get a game plan. They get it the night before. Then in the mornings they review it. Then you sit down with Salvi and MJ and they talk about it. And every hitter has a spot with typically you could go to 3 different pitches and how do I want to go to this game plan and what gives me the best chance to get in the strike zone. So typically it's your fastball. And if you're able to execute that fastball to the location that hitter's weak at, then you got a good chance to be strike one. But if you're trying to make that perfect pitch, there's a chance it's going to be ball one. So I think our pitchers are gaining confidence with that. I think they're seeing different ways. We have a pregame game plan, but even more importantly right now is the after action report that we share with our pitchers every day. And they can visibly see, not only go to video, but they can visibly see on a chart, all right, this is why I got this hitter out. And second at bat, I got away from it, and that's why he got me. And that's the learning curve and the process they have to go through to gain the confidence and the ability to do it. And then also to make, again, I'm repeating myself, but, to make in-game adjustments. So game plan may say something, but catcher may be seeing something different that night, and you got to trust what the catcher's saying and go to it, because a guy like Salvi's caught I don't know how many thousands of pitches. He sees something in a game, you got to trust him too.
Dayton said around the time that he did a couple of interviews around the time Terry Bradshaw the change was made there with the hitting coach, and he he was getting questions about the pitching side of things. And he said, well, we're building a pitch lab, to which I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And I think he said $12 to $14 million expenditure, talking about all the things that are being done. And I looked and I saw that, Milwaukee had one of these since 2019. I've always felt like, I've asked Andy Reid this question a lot. Like, you play a divisional game in the NFL, you only play a handful of teams twice in one season. Does the team that lost have the advantage? Because the team that won, it's kind of obligated to come back and institute the same game plan that worked. Don't fix what ain't broke. Like, it's human instinct. Why? If I do something different and we don't win, I look like an idiot. So I'm going to stay the course on what worked. Or the other team is open to all the new possibilities. Hey, what else can we do? Does complacency set in when you win a championship? Like in 2015, when you win, do you have a mindset of let's not fix what ain't broke? And does that maybe at times perhaps paralyze a franchise from being as aggressive about looking at, turning over every stone to find new ways to do things?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word complacency at all. There's never been a day in any one of our front office members' lives that I think they've been complacent along with our coaches. We're driven, we're competitors, we want to win, we enjoy winning, we've seen what can win. Now, going back to 2015, the game has changed quite a bit since then. You look at Dayton's background, my background, Scott Sharp's background, very traditional in what was reflective of baseball in years prior to that. But since that time and even during that time, we were building out and expanding our analytic department. We believe we have a very, very talented analytic department. We have several members of our current department, previous departments, that have been given opportunities to move on to other organizations. One is actually an assistant general manager with the Boston Red Sox right now, and he was the first person that was hired in our analytic department back in the, around 2007, 2008. He was the architect of building this out, and he helped us adapt. And when you get to 2015, it was done, less on the today's game than it was then. But since then, we've expanded in so many different ways. And we have a performance science department, behavioral science department. Those types of departments didn't exist in 2015, and that's reflective of how the game's changing. And then also the expansion of our analytic department. We have more analysts now than we ever have, and how we implement those things is where we've transitioned. I think our hitting on the minor league side certainly was reflective of that. There's so many different technologies and different data that's out there that we can use, human movements, how the body works, what we can do in the weight room. All of those things have factored in. So I believe we're adapting very well. We want to be aggressive in how we go about it. But also, we don't want to just have new toys just to have new toys. We want those toys that we purchase to be battle tested. Because, our financial situation is a little bit different than some clubs, and we accept that, we understand that, but that's why we have to be right when we invest in certain things like a pitching lab. We have to be convicted and absolutely dead on that that's where we need to go, because that's a heavier investment for us than it is for some of the larger market teams.
Resources, right? Like, I understand that the group that bought the team are very wealthy individuals relative to probably 99% or more of us that are sitting here talking about it. But $1 billion is $1 billion. And I know none of them's last name are Walton. Use an example of the guy who wrote a check for $4 or $5 billion to buy the Denver Broncos. And so I would imagine you buy something for $1 billion. You want a little time to maybe get that, the revenues coming in to have that money come back. And then you also pay that kind of money and have a pandemic that no one could have foreseen and slashes your revenue. Do you have the resources you need, or is this maybe a dirty little secret? Maybe that's not a right way to put it, but maybe this is something that people don't want to talk about, but it's a reality that not only is this a small market club, but it's a club operating with less revenue than it may be able to operate with very soon, having nothing to do with just the revenues of baseball, but just the realities of the timing of the pandemic and the purchase of this team, that revenues are lower now, and perhaps the team would have more wins. And in the future, maybe near future, there'll be more money to spend in free agency and on payroll to maybe boost up the development side of things.
Yeah, John Sherman has been very open-minded to any recommendations that we've made. I think we all understand the inadequacies of the game, large market versus small market, things that larger markets can do. But throw on top of that, his first couple of years here as an owner and his partners as well, it's been a very difficult time from a financial standpoint. But with that said, I know they're very progressive in their thoughts. They want to at least have discussion about things that we think we can do to further our development, which ultimately will lead to more wins in the major leagues. So I don't think anything's off the table. I can't speak to the actual dollars and what they're willing to do. That's something you probably have to ask Mr. Sherman. But I know this, he's always open-minded. He wants to hear different ideas. We have to have good reason to ask him to invest in something. So as we prepare presentations, whatever it may be, so he can go to his owners, his partners, there's a good case to do this. But I think, as you just stated, the Milwaukee Brewers had a lab in 2019. They're one of several clubs that have built labs at spring training facilities, and they've seen good results. So, we're hopeful that, our resources won't restrict us, but we also understand there's a limitation of what we're going to be able to do, no different than our payroll versus some of the clubs that are up over $200 million annually.
Dayton talked about this go-round, I think it was in the 2020 spring training before things got shut down, that in building it back, he wanted to build it back for the long haul, something that was sustainable, not have like a window that was pretty became very apparent was going to be the case in that 13-17 run. Is that possible? Is that? I mean, that's a wonderful idea to have, but is it? And I know, listen, I know the Rays have been on a long run. The Cardinals are a bigger market, not that much bigger. Don't have an NFL team to split the revenues on in that town, but they've been able to sustain it. You know, it can be done. I'm not going to sit here and, you know, try to act like it can't be. It has been done, but it's got to be extraordinarily difficult. Or is it? Is that something that you think that still a small market team playing in market 31, 32 can sustain winning over a long period of time? Or would it be wiser to focus on windows, like whether it was by design or not, that the 13-17 run was really, culminated on?
Yeah. Sren, I think it really depends on how you define winning. If you define winning as being 500, some people will debate that. So to answer your question, do I think it's sustainable? Yes, I do. Our first step right now is to get this young group and guys that are coming up behind them moving in the right direction, so we have stability at the major league level. We start winning more games at the major league level. Once that happens, then the strategy of how do we continue to do this comes into play. We chose a different route in 2017 than we might choose in the coming years. I don't know that until we get to that moment. But when you talk about sustained winning, what you see is Tampa turning players over, Cleveland turning players over. And when you turn players over, you know, there's a population that's out there that's going to be disappointed to see potentially future Hall of Famers move on to next teams. But if we're willing to make sacrifices like that, then we might have a better chance to sustain winning over a long period of time. So, again, going back to my original statement, I think it really it depends on how you define winning. You know, for us, winning is winning the World Series. A lesser version would be getting to the playoffs year in, year out. I think for the smaller market teams, it certainly is more difficult to do that annually than it is for the large market teams. But that's not to say we don't believe we can do that. It's just to say that there's more challenges that we may have than other clubs.
You said if we do that, you mentioned the fans being disappointed when they turn players over, and we've heard that from A's fans and Rays fans. But is it different than being disappointed in having your guys but not winning?
Well, that's what I know. We were hungry to win again in 16 and 17, and we felt like we were able to do that. You know, until we get into that moment, and our focus right now needs to be to get to that moment.
Okay,
so,
right.
You know, I mean, we have to get there first. And we get there, then there will be a lot of great discussion, debate, arguments about which way we need to go. I mean, everything we do is collaborative. You know, I look forward to the days that we can talk to Mr. Sherman about that and what his vision is for the future, talking to Dayton about that, and what do we want to do? I thought it was an extreme high in 15, and we thought it would have been extremely deflating to our city to watch some of those guys be traded away. So, you know, it was a choice we made at that time, but you're going to be talking about a decade later. So things change in 10 years' time, and we have a different ownership group. So we have to take all those things into consideration and make that decision. But the focus right now needs to be to get to that point. Until we get there, you know, the discussion probably isn't to be had.
Last question before I give you a final four, and that is Vinny Pascantino, do you see him on the big league club sometime soon? Definitely this year at some point?
Yeah, you know, I hate saying definitely. I mean, it's hard to ignore what he's doing. He's having a tremendous year. It's been extremely consistent. You know, I've been tracking his at-bats as far as the number of at-bats he's had at the upper levels. I think that we have to be really smart. And fans don't like hearing this. We don't like having the conversations with the players, but there is just a huge population of the major league players, a huge population across the major leagues, superstar players that have been optioned not only once, but twice and even three times or DFA'd. We want to try to avoid that if we can. So, you know, our feeling right now is we're better off being a little bit late than a little bit early. Vinny continues to do tremendous things. We watch it every night. We know what's going on. We understand it. His time will come. I don't want to put a date on it or even expound on it any further. But we do believe he'll be up in 2022. We're just trying to play this out properly so we feel that we're so convicted he's coming up and he's not going to go back. But the understanding, it may happen. You know, it happened to Mike Moustakas. You know, so those things happen, but it's hard to deny what he's doing right now.
We're talking to J.J. Pecola, Royals General Manager, here in the program. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Royals. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. J.J., I will start you with this one. First of all, do you disco? As we have a Boogie Nights is going to be performing here at Worth Harley-Davidson. Would you perhaps be out there discoing were you here tonight for bike night?
There would be zero chance that I'm out discoing. And I can tell you that I never have in the past.
Okay. Good to know. What's your favorite minor league park?
Ooh, I love our park down in South Carolina right now, Columbia. It's you know, just a few years old. The playing surface is tremendous. They draw great atmosphere, great weather. I love their ballpark. You know, I love visiting.
All right, there's one for Royals fans to make a point to go see then. Columbia, South Carolina. We'll put it on the list. What do you like on your dog, your hot dog, when you go to the ballpark?
Mustard and relish. Mustard and relish since I was a kid. Always mustard and relish.
That's a good combination. I can't argue with that one. Finally, the number one movie in America, Top Gun Maverick, is a sequel. You are old enough, like myself, to remember the original coming out. Where were you? Do you remember the theater or what was going on when you went to see the original Top Gun the first time?
Don't remember the theater. I was in high school, but I do remember having a crush on Kelly McGillis for a couple years. But I'm looking forward to seeing the new one.
You will enjoy it. It's very good. It is very good. JJ, thanks so much for the time. I always appreciate it. We certainly hope all the young guys continue to progress along and that things get going in the right direction. But thank you very much for your time and for being so generous with it. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Saran. Appreciate talking about our club and what's going on right now. So thanks for your time.
JJ Pecola, General Manager for the Royals. More here from Worth Harley-Davidson. All right, went a little long there with J.J. Pecola. Our thanks again to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals joining us. We are live at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29 just south of the airport. We'll talk a little more Royals a little bit later on. We will talk some Boogie Nights. They're on stage tonight from 6 to 9, live disco music at the best place for bike night, Worth Harley-Davidson. Friday through Saturday, they got 36 local finalists competing to be crowned grand champion of Kansas City Barbecue, going to win a licensing opportunity for 1 year in the new Concourse B at the brand new KCI Airport. This is a big-time competition. If you love bikes, if you love ice-cold beer, if you love championship barbecue, of course, they'll have Worth's great barbecue as well here. Get over here to Worth Harley-Davidson if you need a bike, worthharleydavidson.com, or just see them in person, I-29 just south of the airport. Always a great time to get to Worth, and this weekend, no different. Big events, big bikes, the best bikes, and, of course, the best place to get them. If you've got a title on anything, they'll talk trade. Of course, great financing as well. It's all here at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29 just south of the airport.
All right, before the Celtics, who was the last team to have three guys with 20 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists in an NBA Finals game? Brought to you by Jazz Louisiana Kitchen.